day with a hop, a skip, and a hoe day. Cause new comics have hit the shelf with so many titles that you can't sell. What's good or bad or just okay? Should you buy it now or wait for the trader? The indies you should know about, and where can you find all this out? Well, luckily this podcast has the answers to all that. They call it God Hates Comics, but does it really? Who knows? And if we're being honest, he's outnumbered by the heroes. So I'm pretty sure we got this. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to God Hates Comics issue 45.
Fuck yeah.
We are trolling along, and trolling specifically. Not really. I've been avoiding Facebook the past couple days, so I don't know what's going on.
I'm not trolling at all.
but yeah.
A lot calmer for it.
What?
So then you're a lot calmer for it.
I guess. I was thinking of Scott Truth, though. I was on Facebook, and I was just seeing all these people, and they were just pissing me off. I was getting mad. Just all the time, I see like anything somebody post. A certain person that we know would post something, and I'd just be like, "You're the biggest hypocrite in the world, fuck you!" And I let myself get really mad.
And what I love about that is that you guys are talking about it, and every now and then I'd interject, but like fully well known, because I don't know these people, I don't know what's going on. And I'm just like, "Wait, what happened? What's going on?" They said, "What?"
Yeah, pretty much. So I just kind of decided that I needed to take a break, and so I've been avoiding Facebook for the most part, outside my check-ins for boxing, because it's for the children's.
The children's.
So on the flip side of that, though, I have read a crap ton of books the last couple of weeks, week. I read all six volumes of Scott Pilgrim, because I got them during the digital sale from Comixology last week before.
2 weeks ago, maybe?
Whatever it was, so I was at work Tuesday night, and so I pretty much just bear mauled through like volumes 3, 4, 5, and 6, like all at once.
Jesus,
and
how slow was work?
When I work late nights like that, I'm literally sitting in a room watching a guy do work, so I just can do anything.
Nice.
It's inspections, and so they're inspections that have to be done, and I have to be on site, but there's nothing for me to do.
Yeah.
I'm sure I could think of something to do, but I'd rather sit and read Scott Pilgrim.
Just want you to know you now have it on audio recording that I'm at work.
It's inadmissible. It's all hearsay. He's speaking hypothetically right now.
Thank you. But no, so I read a whole bunch of Scott Pilgrim. I read Death Note Black Editions, Volumes 3 and 4, and I started Volume 5. If you've ever watched the movies, then the manga is like... The movies are very off book. I was about like, the mangas are very different from the movie, and I'm like, well, wait, that's not how it works. The movies kind of condense the first big arc down into two movies, and they change a lot of the aspects for film. So I'm interested with the new show specifically how they're going to handle it, because the manga goes in a lot of very strange, different directions that I would not have expected. It's good. It's great. I've been enjoying it a lot, and within the first couple of pages of Volume 5, I was annoyed. I had to put it down and finish cooking dinner because I was like, no, I'm going to find out what happens. But so it's been taken off. It's been over for a while now, but I've just now gotten around to finish. I've had all the volumes. I'm finally just now getting into sitting down and reading them all. And then, so I read all those. Scott Pilgrim is another one where the movie is taking six volumes of graphic novel and condensing it into 2 hours, so naturally you're going to lose a lot of it. So it's interesting how much of it stays and how much of it goes, but even in the stuff that goes, how kind of, like, they'll pull dialogue from other parts of the book and sub it into other parts of the movie. Like, the line where she's like, Scott, if your life had a face, I would punch it. Like, that's not in that conversation in the book, but it's in a different conversation in the book. So they pull it in, and...
It's a good line, but
it's interesting because like a lot of the stuff is given a lot more room to breathe naturally because they have six volumes worth. Like his relationship with Ramona is not nearly as quick as it is in the book, or in the movie rather. Like in the movie, you're kind of questioning. Like I love the movie, don't get me wrong, but you're kind of questioning why he's so infatuated with this girl after like a week. Mm-hmm. It's not given a whole lot of room to breathe. But then the book, like they're together for several months. And it's given a lot more room to develop.
Well, I mean, I think it helps that the books didn't come out one right after the other. Like, the movie is just really fast. You have to fit everything in an hour and a half to 2 hours. So, that kind of condense everything.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then, the ending is a little bit different, but it's the same thing, only different. But it's really, really good. And the colors, Nathan Fairbairn did the colors for all six volumes. And he did Yannick Paquette's Swamp Thing, too, I think.
Yeah.
So he's really, really good at what he does. And he makes the books look amazing. There's one part in the book where... because Ramona changes her hair color, but the original books were in black and white. And so it was all just kind of implied. And so when they go back and they actually put it in color, there's one thing where they put a joke to the side. It's like, this joke worked a lot better in black and white. and so I was like, that's clever. But so I had a lot of fun reading all those. And then, not to be outdone, I read Volume 1 of Kamen Rider by Shotaro Ishimori. He did a Kamen Rider. He created Kamen Rider, the show, but then also did a manga for Kamen Rider. And Comixology has all the volumes up, and I bought them way back when during a sale. They actually have a lot of Ishinomori stuff on Comixology. Like, it used to be just Kamen Rider, but they've added a good chunk of stuff that a good amount of it Felipe found in Austin, the jerk. But I can get it digitally, probably for cheaper.
Yeah, at the end, so you got it digitally. I think you won out.
Yeah. So, and he didn't find Kamen Rider; he found other stuff. But Kamen Rider, it's interesting too, because the biggest thing for me is that it's like it's extremely violent. Like it's three chapters, and it's basically Kamen Rider versus the first two villains, and then the third chapter is left on a cliffhanger in the middle of a battle. But like the second battle, he fights Batman, not. The Batman monster. Because in the first one, he fights Spider-Man, who is a spider mutant monster. But since it was Japan in the 70s, they just called him, you know, Spider-Man, Batman, space. There's always space.
Space-Man.
Space.
Oh, no, okay. Okay, gotcha. No. Space. I was like, bat, so you're shaking my head. Man.
Damn it, Pips.
I was like, really, Ben? And well,
you said space man, so I'm just like, okay.
And so, like, in the second volume, he's fighting Bat Spaceman. Bat Spaceman in a cemetery. And what Bat Spaceman does is he will bite people and he can control them. And he looks like a giant bat. He looks kind of like Man-Bat. Way before Man-Bat was a thing, I think. So Kamen Rider is fighting him and he transforms and everything. And he literally, like, fights this guy and he finds out what the antidote is, the antidote to his serum, and he literally has he's got horns on the tips of his wings. He has to get those horns to cure people. They're the only cure. And so he literally is fighting this guy. He rips his goddamn wings off, like just straight up goes up to him and is like, alright, now I can heal these people, and just goes. And then he's starting to fight the guy and he finally like kicks him and he's down and he's like, yeah, I gotta kill this guy. So he picks up this giant stone cross and stabs the dude right through the fucking chest. Like, straight up. And I'm like, whoa. This is very violent. But it's drawn in a very, like, Osamu Tezuka style. So, like, it's not gritty. Like, the characters don't look violent. They look kind of,
it's like My cartoonish. Stabbing someone.
And that's actually the most interesting thing about the book to me, is that the characters look very cartoonish, but the locales and everything like that are like flawlessly rendered, like perfectly, but then the characters are all cartoony. So it's a very interesting. Having seen Kamen Rider and having now read this, it's interesting that they're created by the same guy, because he, even though he created Kamen Rider, he still separates this and makes it its own thing. So you're not just reading the same thing that you already watched, which I think is cool.
Rad. What did you do?
Helped a friend move. Other than that, I bought a whole bunch of shit. but I haven't had a chance to read any of it yet.
Well, so that's good.
That will be my Friday.
Awesome.
But, yeah. No, I bought the SDCC Jim Lee Blue Line action figure exclusive that they had.
So it's an action figure of Jim Lee?
No,
it's an action figure of Batman drawn like it's a Jim Lee Blue Line.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so it's like white with blue lines on it.
Well, yeah, it's just the figure is white, and it's like, it's penciled, so it's just white and black, and that's it.
Gotcha. Because, like, a couple years ago, I don't know, I think Hasbro or whatever, they did a Stan Lee, like, action figure.
Oh, you're right, and I get what you mean. But yeah, this is a Jim Lee Batman figure.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it just
Jim
looks
Lee
like
as Batman.
Batman. Exactly.
Because you can't see under the mask, you don't know it's not Jim Lee.
It's always been Jim Lee.
Always.
Right now.
That's the joke. But,
no, it's cool. And then
that's
my,
the joke.
My Alfred Cotobukiya statue.
Yeah.
To go along with all the other ones. That one's cool. Because I got like 131 out of 1,000.
Nice.
Uh-huh. You know what I should have done? It pissed me off that I didn't do it.
Invested in Facebook.
Yeah, that too. But I bought a Green Arrow statue. Like they recently did some superhero line.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. I bought it, and when I went back to Bedrock the next day, they were like, or the next week, they were like, oh, guess what? I was like, what? Remember that Green Arrow statue you bought last week? I was like, yeah. It's like, well, the other one we had in the back, it was one. It was like number one of like the 5200 run.
Oh, man.
And I was like, dang, can I bring it back and like just change it out? And they're like, sure. And I forgot. I just didn't do it.
What the fuck's wrong with you?
I don't know. Like, it doesn't really matter if it's number one. Like, I think it's cool, but...
Yes.
You sound like one of those Mondo collectors. They buy a poster. Yes. They buy a poster set and they're pissed off they're not matching numbers.
Why?
Yeah. Because they're not matching numbers. They want.
I know why they're pissed off. Like I okay. I know.
Getting the insight into the poster community as I have, it has become abundantly clear to me that it is a terrifying place.
People are jerkholes.
They really are in a way, and
holes of jerk.
I really just I don't even know. I'm still in the group now? Yeah, I'm still in the group.
Here,
get out of
here. Here's one thing that did happen to me today. Much I wanted to tell you guys about, I figured I'd just talk about it here.
Okay. I met Stephen Amell.
That's
forgot
cool.
About that.
That's cool as shit.
That's cool. All right, but go ahead.
So, on my way here, actually, this lady pulled up next to me and started yelling at me, and I was just kind of like, okay, and I couldn't hear what she said, and I had to turn. And so, as I turned, she was in the lane next to me, and she, like, stopped really quickly and followed me. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? So, rolled down my window and she pulls up next to me again, and I finally understand what she's saying. She's like, I saw your Batman sticker and my son has some, and it was just unintelligible what she was saying. And then I realized that her kid was in the back holding up headphones that had Batman on them, and she's like, he's like, Batman. So her kid apparently freaked the fuck out when he saw my Batman and Flash stickers that were on my car, and like insisted on telling me that he had just bought Batman headphones and he wanted me to know that.
That's pretty cool.
Actually, it's really cool. Yeah.
And I was just like, awesome! And he like smiled and was like, yeah! And I was just like, cool, dude.
Dusty, that takes solace that you made that kid's day.
Right. Seriously. It's like, there's a grown up with his own car that likes what I like!
Exactly. That's pretty cool.
I think that that's even kind of to the extent of what she said. It was like, he saw it and was like, oh my god. Oh my god, adult!
Well, that's cool. Yeah, so like I said, I went to Austin over the weekend because they had a meet and greet, basically wine tasting with Stephen Amell, because he owns or runs a wine company, apparently. He has his own wine label, Knocking Point. Get it? Because knocks on the back of an arrow. Okay.
Doesn't the main dude from Tool do wines too?
I think a lot of people do wines.
He's done a couple limited ones or something like that.
But anyway.
Minor does.
So, I mean, there had to be like 200-something people there.
I think my friend Steve and his girlfriend were there.
Yeah, but it was cool. I mean, apart from having to stand outside for an hour in fucking Texas summer heat, just kind of roasting while we waited to get inside, Amell actually came out and talked to everyone in the line, shook hands, and when he got to me, I shook his hand and said, hey man, loved you in Flash. And he had a good laugh about it, and I had a good laugh about it, and then he left. Talked to someone else, and I was like, okay. Great.
Loved you in Wall Street. But, so that's what I'd tell him.
He was on Wall Street?
No.
Awesome.
That's the joke.
Obviously.
Wall Street came out in, like, what, 88?
Yeah, obviously I'm not on point today. I don't know.
You are nuts.
Just... But apart from going to Austin and meeting Green Arrow...
You mean The Arrow.
The Arrow. Whatever. He knows who he is. I know who he is. You know who he is.
He's a Green Arrow. So
do I know who he is?
I mean, not biblically, but I'm sure at least, like, IMDb style.
Yeah, but I know lots of people that way.
Yeah, well, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, right?
Yeah, it's that 6 degrees... 1 degree, and Kevin Bacon is Hitler.
Is what? Fuck.
All right.
Okay. What is this?
The Mad
Furious Road to the White House begins here.
Hey.
Oh, Jesus.
It's the Mad cover that has Hillary as Furiosa and Bill Clinton as Max. Heavens.
Heavens. But
Heavens to Murgatroyd. Terrible even.
Like, last week, I read a shitload of comics. I read through Captain Brennan and MI-13. I read...
You said that last podcast.
Okay, no, I finished it last week. I started it last podcast. Anyway, Kinski is another book that I finished. It's by Gabriel Hartman. Have you guys heard of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I've heard of Gabriel Hartman.
All right, well, it's basically... It's a six-issue... it was digital first. I think it put out by Monkey Brain.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think Image did do a collected, like... trade paperback.
Yeah.
But it's basically, it's a story about, like, a guy, he's on a business trip, and he sees a dog, like, that's a lost puppy, and fucking goes crazy trying to, like, get this dog, even though he knows who the owners is, or the owners are, I guess. So he, like, goes on this, I don't want to say a rampage, but, like, he tries to get the dog when he realizes that the dog has owners. He finds out where they live, and then he kidnaps the dog, or dog naps the dog, whatever. Can't get on a plane with a dog because he doesn't want to store him in, like, he doesn't want to check him. I guess he doesn't want to check the dog. I don't know how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes on a road trip, and then, like, he takes the dog out to use the bathroom, and the dog gets lost, and then he gets lost in a trailer park, and he gets into a run-in with a bunch of hicks and hillbillies or whatever. And then the dog runs away. And it's like this whole ordeal. And eventually, like, he loses his job because of this dog. He, like, it's kind of fucked up. But then by the end of the story, he, like, comes back to that town and kind of, like, picks things up and starts over, I guess. Like, it's really...
You're not selling this very well.
No.
I don't really know how to explain. Like I said, it's just...
That much is evident.
But
I love Gabriel Hartman's artwork, though.
No, his artwork is great. And the first two or three issues really grabbed me. And, like, by the end, I was like, okay, this is interesting, but it's not, like... I was expecting something more.
Sounds like it.
I mean, you read books that are kind of labeled like slice of life. Like, this is legitimately like, dang, okay, this is just like a really weird moment in this guy's life.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I also read Casanova. Last week's release, which was, I mean, I can't remember what the last two issues were. This is number three. And this book doesn't really help you catch up, but in all honesty, I don't think you need to, because it kind of feels like a mostly self-contained story.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the cliffhanger at the end, and, okay, read issue four. But, like, what I actually loved about it was at the end, like, the last page, it was, like, a pin-up of Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick by Fabio Moon.
Nice.
And that was my favorite part of the book. Not to say that the book was bad. I'm just saying, like, that was a really, you know, it's, like, really cool picture. I can't remember what the caption was, but it was pretty good. Apart from that, I don't think I did anything else.
I also, through Dorkshelf, Meredith's thing that she does, I got to send some questions over to Paul Cornell.
Yeah.
And my last question is, are you still as disappointed as I am that Captain Britain and MI-13 got canceled?
What did he say?
I haven't heard back. I got confirmation that the questions were sent to him, but we'll see what he says. But, there's something else that came to mind that I was going to do. Know, oh!
Rereading that book recently, it's like, I didn't realize how good the entire series... I mean, it's like, you know it's good. You remember it being good, but
yeah.
It's still, like, it really holds up. It's really well done. I like how it's tied into Secret War, or Secret Invasion, but it's not, like, so wrapped
derailed
up.
Derailed by
yeah,
Secret
it's not
Invasion.
Derailed by it. And it's not so wrapped up in it that you can't understand it without knowing Secret Invasion.
Right.
You know? Also, like, the way the book ends, it kind of ends in, like, a very, like, it's like a movie-esque moment where, like, all of a sudden it decides to, what you call it, like, introduce all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, you've been reading Captain Britain, the MI-13.
Yeah, like, do the credits where you see every character.
Yeah. And it just kind of ends like that, and I'm like... That's badass. It was really cool.
I also tried out the Chew card game.
How was that?
I enjoy it quite a bit. It's pretty... There's not a whole lot to it. It's mostly turn-based. You know, you're almost a puzzle game kind of a way, because you're not puzzle, but like, it's not like a strategy game or anything like that.
Wait,
it's,
is it competitive or cooperative?
It's competitive.
Okay.
You're playing against each other. Basically, you have your, you were given a case and a culprit, and you have to connect them.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways you connect them are through clue cards that have values on them, and you have to get your mystery to add up to a certain value before it can be solved. But each card has colors on the borders, and you have to match those up. And the cards have costs, and you have cards that can fuck up the other players, that can help the other players, or whatever. So, cool. It definitely is something that sounds like it works better with multiple players. So we may have to try it out.
With?
I played with Vanessa.
Okay.
So we may have to try it out sometime.
I played it myself.
Yeah, played it myself. So yeah, we may have to try it out sometime, but it was pretty fun.
Cool.
Anyway, on that note, we're gonna. There's no real. Again, there's not a whole lot of huge news this week.
Nope.
A couple of tidbits fell through, like they cast Wally West on The Flash, things like that, but none of that stuff is gonna shake the earth or anything that we really have anything to comment on, so.
He is black, so.
He is.
Black Flash.
Which, I mean, if it's her nephew or.
Her brother or whatever.
Cousin.
Yeah, it would kind of make fucking sense.
Yeah.
If he's from that family, yeah, it would.
Hi, I'm Wally West. I'm. Her nephew, I'm white, deal with it.
No,
okay.
I'm white. No, that was... was a living color. Jim Carrey did a Vanilla Ice parody, and that was, like, his first line of his rap was, I'm white! Anyway, so... This Jason Todd Joker fan theory...
stupid.
It's gained more precedence since Arkham Knight has come out. I haven't played Arkham Knight, so fuck you for the spoiler, Vince.
Oh, my bad. I didn't play it either.
It doesn't sound like it's a huge spoiler, but whatever. It's out of context, so I don't really know what it means. But within that game, turn it off if you haven't played it.
If you can't figure
it, just calm down.
It's him.
I'm explaining what's happening here.
Yeah, okay.
In Arkham Knight, Jason Todd is captured and branded at some point with a J. By the Joker, assumedly.
On his face.
On his face. I still don't know what this means out of context, but don't tell me. Okay. So, this is bringing a lot of people, and they are saying that is further fuel that this Joker in the DC cinematic universe is not actually the Joker, but Jason Todd. It's still, like you even say in here, it's still really out there, and I think it's grasping at non-existent straws.
Yeah. Well, okay,
like, it's scratching an itch that's not an itch.
It's not, but in a way, I kind of think it makes sense, because if there's one thing that the internet fandom has, like, you'll always hear, it's like they cast, as a Joker. Shit.
Leto?
Leto. Cast Jared Leto's a Joker. First thing they're going to say is, oh, he's no
Heath Ledger,
right? They cast Heath Ledger, oh, he's no Jack Nicholson. They cast Jack Nicholson, someone probably said, oh, he's no Cesar Romero.
That person was an idiot.
You know what I'm saying. All right? So what better way than to be like, okay, this, like, to kind of squash that and just be like, all right, this is a new Joker. Like, not just...
It already is a new Joker.
It already is a new Joker, but, like, not the original Joker. It's, like, a second Joker, you know?
The question...
If you think about it, he's been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
Technically, Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why the hell is the Joker still running around shocking people and making people hurt real bad?
Because he's the Joker.
It's
and
true.
That's also a flashback.
Well, maybe. We don't know.
We don't know that.
We don't know, but either way, it's to the point where people are like, well, why is Joker still not? Like, because he's the Joker.
Yeah, because Batman never fucking kills the Joker. It's the goddamn point.
Well,
for me, it's still...
Why is Zod not around? Because Superman killed him, even though eventually he might get to a point where he doesn't kill anymore. At some point, he killed, right? Same thing can happen with Batman.
Superman's character is not ingrained on him not killing anybody. Superman has killed people before.
Batman is ingrained.
That's like a defining trait of his character, is that he doesn't kill his villains. Which is why the first Batman movie with Keaton is flawed in a way, because Batman has absolutely no problem killing the Joker.
He kills
a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now, I like Batman.
Tim Burton decided to take it in a dark direction, so it's...
Batman's directors. Already dark. You yeah. need yeah. to be darker.
I guess it's Michael Uslan to decide.
Yeah, whatever. But for me, I still feel like this Jason Todd Joker theory is... Like I said, I feel like it's creating something out of nothing. It's basically yeah. looking at the Joker they're taking, saying, this doesn't work for me.
How can I create
How can
something?
I make it so that it does?
Yeah, exactly.
And don't get me wrong, I can understand the mindset behind that of, that can't be right, let me rationalize it in my head. But that's all it is.
Yeah.
In reality, what you're looking at is the Joker in this version. I mean, it's like you said, people view the Joker as this terrible, sadistic monster. But, you know, back in the 60s, he was making fucking Joker fish.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he was almost a joke to himself, like a parody almost, not even a serious villain. And then he became that. And I'm like,
Joker's
so it's
bones.
It's like you look at Cesar Romero as the Joker, that's not that far off from what the Joker was like at the time.
Yeah.
And so the Joker changed. The Joker's different. The Joker has all these different versions. And so this is just another line of those versions.
Yeah.
Now let me, like I said, I can get why you'd be like, oh, this doesn't make sense. I've got to rationalize it. But that's only going to make you happy until you watch the movie and realize you're wrong. Then you're just going to be pissed again.
Or it'll make you happy if you realize you're right. I saw
a meme that actually had it pretty well. It was like, had a picture of Cesar Romero, and it's like the clown, and then a picture of Nicholson, and it's like the gangster, and then a picture of Ledger, and it says the anarchist, and then a picture of Leto, and it says the psychopath, and then a picture of Mark Hamill, and it says the Joker.
Yeah.
No, I read one, I forget what it was, and it was like... Well, it was like Jack Nicholson, and it was like the Joker on crack, and then it was like Heath Ledger, and it was like the Joker on heroin, and then with Jared Leto, it was like the Joker on meth.
Yeah.
And not even once, kids. But I don't know, for me, I'm just like, I know that this version of the Joker has been, the reception has been a little mixed. I think the trailer subdued some of it for some people when they kind of saw a little bit of it in action, but... For me, these Jason Todd fan theories are just, they are a fan theory.
Well, I mean, that's what they are. I think they're fun things to kind of talk about, because, like, if you do look at it, and they have, like, the, when Batman or Bruce Wayne opens up the newspaper and it says, you let your family die, it's like, you can easily say that's the people in Wayne Tower that died when Zod knocked it open, right?
It
or
still raises
you
the
can
question.
Say it's Jason Todd dying at the hands of the Joker. Or you can say it's the resurrected Joker.
Because to me, I don't try and think of, well, who's it got to be by? I say, damn, I can't wait to see this movie because I can figure out who that's from.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong.
Like,
a trailer...
No Fun Dusty?
A trailer is...
Trailers mean nothing to me. I don't like to analyze
well,
things.
Well, trailers are meant to raise questions. But
yeah.
The thing is it gets to the point where...
create...
There's so little that you know to ask that question and then answer it for yourself.
Yeah.
Is a little bit... Because that's essentially what's happened. It's like, who could have sent him that paper? Oh, it must clearly be this and this and this.
You know nothing about
it. It must clearly be a Joker... That knows who Batman is, right? Why would he know who Batman is?
Because
he's
been around.
Todd.
Oh,
wow,
my God.
Mind blown. That just won the internet. Fuck.
Or it's the Joker who's been around for 20 years and figured out who he was.
Yeah, I mean, I personally prefer that theory, honestly.
Or Lex Luthor.
The Joker just kind of knows.
Or it was Alfred being a dick.
So that's a fan theory I can get behind. We've solved the mystery, guys. World's greatest detectives right here.
I mean,
Alfred being a dick.
I've always liked...
Every morning, Bruce wakes up to the same fucking thing.
Let your family die.
Gets his coffee, opens the paper, you let your family die.
And then Alfred,
God damn it,
Alfred.
Alfred
hands him the coffee, and Alfred every morning is just like, what, sir?
I mean, I...
He is not our enemy, but I am. I think you're a
yeah.
dick.
I subscribe to the, the theory, the fan theory, whatever, that both Gordon and... Well, I mean, now I think it's kind of proven that Joker knows who Batman is, but he doesn't care.
Oh, for Joker, it's not about who he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Gordon. He doesn't. He knows who Batman is, but he doesn't
Gordon's
care.
Kind of always known who Batman was. It's just the unspoken bond.
I don't know if Gordon's going to be in this new Batman stuff, though.
He might not be in it until Batman, the solo movie.
Because they're saying What's-Her-Face is going to play Barbara Gordon,
mm-hmm.
not Carrie Kelly. So, What's-Her-Face? Jenna Malone.
Yeah.
So we'll see. a lot of interesting stuff going on. But for me, it's the Joker, people. Get over it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. I may be no fun Andrew right now, but he's the Joker, and he's not Jason Todd. For me, the issue with making it Jason Todd is that...
it's too fucking complicated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You basically have to introduce that there was a Joker before him, establish that that Joker died somehow, establish what he did to Jason, and then establish that in his weird, whacked-out mind, Jason was like, better become the new Joker. Like,
well, maybe if Jason...
that's a lot to cover.
...snapped and killed him and then became the Joker.
Well, it could be. I mean, what... did you ever watch the movie of
Batman Beyond Return of the Joker?
Yeah.
Everybody should watch Batman Beyond Return of the Joker.
Absolutely. But basically, spoilers if you haven't seen it, what happens in that movie is Joker kidnaps Tim Drake and tortures him.
Turns him into Joker Light.
Basically. Or Joker Jr. or whatever. And
it's funny because Tim Drake is now Batman Beyond.
Yes.
Yeah. But Batman gets him, rehabilitates him, whatever, and sends him back into the world as Tim Drake. Except, the Joker still emerges periodically, which could be, I mean, they kind of look at that and be like, oh, hey, it's kind of neat, one of Batman's proteges.
But that was Joker doing something specifically to him to do that.
Well, I mean, that they can do that in the new movie. It's not like they can't say that.
Again, too complicated. They're just going to go straight in. It's not even...
That was within the context of a movie where that was the entire story.
Yeah.
Because that was the whole mystery of that movie, is how the fuck is this guy here?
Yeah.
How is he back? How is he doing this? That was the whole mystery of that movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But with this, the Joker's origin is not going to be our focus.
No.
At least not that complicated of an origin. Because you have to establish a bunch of characters, establish a bunch of events, and then bring in the new characters to get to the point.
Yeah.
And I just think that's too much going on for it to be anything outside this guy's the Joker. No, don't get me wrong.
Well, technically he is the Joker.
Well, it's the Joker.
You know what we mean.
T-H-E Joker.
A Joker.
No.
B.
Shut the fuck up. No. So it's interesting because... Fan theories are those things that can be really, really interesting, or they can be really, really needlessly complicated, and I feel like this Jason Todd one is needlessly complicated, and it's answering a question that isn't even really a question.
Yeah.
True. It's basically, it's just a why does he have crazy tattoos? Because...
again, it's a rationalization.
Yeah.
You want to know...
well,
fan,
I mean,
theories,
a lot,
to
what
me,
some people say...
I like the fan theories, like the guy that went and found out the day for Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day song. Okay, so this guy meticulously researched everything and found out the motherfucking day that was the good day.
Yes.
Okay, so we now know the exact date. I like those fan theories.
We know the date of the good day.
But you give me a fan theory that Joker is not Joker, but Jason Todd, based off of a fucking 2-minute trailer where you see the Joker for a total of 5 to 10 seconds, yeah, you can go fuck yourself.
Well, what I'm saying is that, okay,
well, it's
like,
a thing too,
Jason
where, like,
Todd in the comics has always kind of been portrayed as, like, that, I mean, he's more, like, okay, he's a child of the 80s in the comics, at least. He's, like, supposed to be more punker because he was, like, on the streets.
Yeah.
So that could kind of explain the tattoos and, like, the teardrop tattoo. Like, maybe the J is
the
Joker thing.
Too
maybe
complicated.
It's like J for
it's
Jason.
It's all too much.
More to my point, we've got dick confirmation that Jason Todd is even in these movies.
Yeah. Can we,
like,
could
we
Dick Grayson?
It could be
Dick Grayson.
It could be Dick Grayson. You're right. Maybe he got
but that's,
a J.
But that's to a point where you're moving past rationalization straight into assumptions and speculation.
Yeah, and that's where I don't want, like, going. It's just like...
It's like when people look at Pokemon and they have to try to rationalize, what world is Pokemon? And, like, they rationalize that it's this, like, post-nuclear... society that
no,
mutated
it's
animals.
Like, if you had
shit.
Just
yeah.
watched
yeah.
the
that's
full movie
they
and they leave a few things open, then I can understand trying to speculate on those questions that they left unanswered. But this is a fucking trailer. We know nothing about shit.
Two trailers.
You know, and whatever.
Three
okay.
trailers, I guess.
But my point is, yeah, there are no questions to even be asked.
We know nothing about...
there are questions
well,
to be asked.
Yeah. You aren't,
but again,
gotta,
you're
these
not...
aren't, these aren't
these
the
questions,
questions
to be asked.
No, they are questions that... I don't even have a problem with people asking. But again, they're asking the question and then answering it for themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. They're basically saying, I have this question about this movie. Let me answer it for myself with a
it's
bunch
like,
of made-up
like,
shit
yeah,
that I
like
have no basis for.
You guys don't understand the purpose behind fan theories. It's a theory...
oh, I get them. I just
fan.
Don't like them.
It's like it's
oh,
just,
don't get me wrong. I know exactly what a fan theory is. I just think most of them are full of shit.
Yeah.
They are full of shit, because, like, one, they're never going to get proven wrong, right or wrong.
Yes, they are. The movie's going to come out. It's a fucking trailer we're talking about.
This fan theory. I'm not talking about... I'm talking about all fan theories.
Well,
fan theories in general are used to explain things, in my mind, that aren't things that necessarily needed explaining. Like, how the world of Pokemon came to exist. That's not a question that needs to be answered.
Or why, like, six actors that play James Bond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, or why Mario exists in this world where he jumps through pipes. I mean, people try to establish these rationalizations for why these worlds exist the way they do.
The answer is, fuck,
like,
off, they do.
The answer is, the answer is even more basic than that. The answer is, it's fiction.
Yeah.
Like, the
thing, exactly. Like, why do you have to have a fucking explanation for
people,
it?
People were talking about Batman
laser beams. That's the fucking end of it.
I forget what it was. I was talking to somebody once, and they were just like, they were talking about Batman this and Batman this and how Batman would do this and this, and I was like, Batman would do none of these things because Batman isn't fucking real. Like, it's that thing where, like, people get so wrapped up with, they're like, well, Batman could do this, and I'm like, Batman can do nothing because Batman is on a piece of paper.
Let me ask you a question. Does Gotham City exist on Earth?
Are you tricking me with this?
It's just simple. Is Gotham City on Earth?
Is Gotham City on Earth in what sense?
Is Gotham City... That's the question.
Gotham City, the Batman exists as a fictional place that is not real.
Okay.
Same with Metropolis.
Yeah.
No fun, Andrew. All right.
You could extrapolate New York to being Gotham City, because New York is known as the Gotham. But no. The Gotham City, as Batman knows it, is not a place. No. Neither is Metropolis, neither is Coast City, neither is Central City, or wherever.
And if you think they are, I really suggest you go see a therapist.
Go see the rapist for 200.
I didn't say they're unreal. Never mind.
Do they exist?
On Earth.
Not our Earth.
That's like asking if they're real. There is no difference.
Because if they're on another Earth, we can't get there.
If it exists on paper, is it real or fake?
I'm not in. Okay, moving on.
That's an interesting predicament you're doing there, but it doesn't... That makes it a trick question, because you're saying by the very fact that it exists on paper, it's a real place, but it's not a real place. It's still a fictional place.
Mm.
Can something exist and be something can exist?
I
can
draw you a map and put fucking Gotham on it. Doesn't make it real.
But no, just because something exists does not mean it is a real thing. Like, Gotham City exists in a book; it is fiction, but that doesn't make it real. Real is something you can reach out and touch. Gotham is on a piece of paper. You're never getting to it.
Touch the paper.
That's what you're touching, the paper. You're not touching the city.
I'm gonna touch my nuts.
He's gonna kick you. His foot's gonna touch your nuts at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Alright, so spinning out of that, good lord, that got really existential there for a minute.
If I kick you in the nuts, aren't they real?
The pain will be very real.
I assure you of that.
All right, so this is something we can use it a little bit, but Marvel and Bendis have this thing now where apparently Bendis has to write two books of every franchise he does.
Apparently. Yeah.
He did this with Avengers, he did this with
X-Men,
and he's going to be apparently doing it again with Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Even Guardians to an extent. Didn't he start off the Guardians team-up book?
Yeah.
So he has this thing where when he writes a franchise, he likes to write two books. Now with X-Men, didn't they focus on different things at the very least?
Yes. Uncanny was on Uncanny. I mean, like the Cyclops team, and then all new X-Men focus on the younger team.
And then with
it was the other way around. I think Uncanny was the
Uncanny features Cyclops and everybody, and then fucking all new X-Men features the young X-Men. That's why it's called all new X-Men.
Oh yeah, but at some point the new X-Men, the all new or the young X-Men moved over to Cyclops' team. The whole hullabaloo.
Yeah, hullabaloo.
Anyway.
And then with Avengers, it was a little bit different on each team, although some of them were crossovers, I think. I don't know. But he likes to write two books. So it's happening again with Iron Man. Well, they haven't confirmed it, but they have claimed that
They said the last page or the final scene of Invincible Iron Man number one is going to be so big that another book is going to have to spin out of it. Basically, they're calling it a sister title, and they're saying it's going to star... Tony Stark's going to be in it, but I don't think he's the main character, and it's going to star someone else that's, like, closely related to the Iron Man family, I suppose.
I guess. It's interesting because, for me, it raises the question of, I mean, by that logic, wouldn't Dark Phoenix have needed multiple books to be told? I mean, by that logic, wouldn't Crisis on Infinite Earths have needed multiple books be told?
I guess technically
it's that idea that
it's more money.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it seems misleading to me for a company to say, oh, well, this is something that's going to require two books. No, it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't require two books.
No.
You're putting out two books because you choose to, which, in all fairness, I don't think they'll pretend they're not. But it's, I would more so just tell Ben, just take this 7 years of Iron Man stories you've got and tell them in the 3 years it should actually take.
I can agree with that.
Uncompress it and get that shit down. It is interesting though, because it means that the character is dominated by one writer, which isn't typically how DC is handled outside, like, Greg Cockwright's Action and Batman Superman.
That's about the
only instance of something, but that makes them very different things.
Because
Action is a very Superman-centric book, while Batman Superman is naturally about the both of them. And so, it's an interesting predicament because it's, it's an interesting predicament because it does mean the character's dominated by one character. Sorry, I got distracted. But in DC, you've got instances where, you know, Green Lantern has four books that are mostly by different people, and Batman has several books that are all by different people.
Well, because it's like, I can respect the fact that Batman is Snyder doing something else, and then Detective Comics is fuck God knows who doing something else. And then, I mean, at one point there was Batman the Dark Knight, which was...
terrible.
Doing something else. Terrible, but doing something else.
Yeah.
There was a fourth Batman book?
Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin, which is Tomasi doing something else.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. I'm like...
yeah, yeah. So
Dark Knight got better when they got a stable writer, but...
yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got four different books starring the same character, but different aspects of that one character. With what Marvel is doing, they're taking two different books, same writer. I mean, granted, we don't know because we haven't read anything. We don't know more. We don't know. We really don't know anything about it.
Right.
But I'm assuming Bendis is writing both of these books. They're going to tie in, you know, and they're going to be closely related in somehow. And I just think that's, it's kind of a disservice to the character. It's a disservice to the fans because you can very easily make a second Iron Man book that's about a different aspect of Iron Man, which is a different
writer. Which they've done before, actually.
You know?
They've done multiple Iron Man books by different people before. And I know that they kind of put it under the guise of, oh, well, it's all one big story. I'm like, well, then tell it in one fucking book.
Yeah.
That's what annoys me.
That's the only thing that concerns me.
Different styles of books.
That's what concerns me about Jeff Lemire writing Old Man Logan and Extraordinary X-Men, is I guarantee you at some point, even if I just want to read Extraordinary X-Men, I'm going to need to read Old Man Logan. Like the
It'd
fact
be nice
that
he
writes,
if he didn't do that because
but Old Man Logan's on the Extraordinary X-Men,
and I get
that.
But Wolverine,
it's gonna happen.
Has always had his own comic, and you didn't always have to go back and forth between Wolverine and X-Men.
You didn't, but when they're written by the same guy,
Jason Aaron, Wolverine, and Wolverine and the X-Men. But it's like
Jason Aaron ended Wolverine and then launched Wolverine and the X-Men.
Right.
And the fact that he's writing Hawkeye too, I could easily see all three of those books dovetailing together. Which, that's a different conversation, the nature of crossovers between books and everything like that. But it's a little strange because it does feel like we're just trying to get money by basically putting out two
businesses. It's a cash grab.
Everything a business does is technically a cash grab.
But it's like they're blatant cash grabs, and then there are like I said, DC putting out four Batman books by four different writers that each offer four different takes on the same character. That seems like less of a cash grab.
That's variety.
That's variety. That seems like
that's
less
like
of a cash grab.
That's like, if you don't enjoy
grab.
This one, try this one.
Yeah, but that's less of a cash grab than Marvel putting out two books, or fuck, because they've been dubbed, because they love to double ship, and Bendis is like the master of double shipping.
Yeah.
Either they've been 3 to 4 books a month by the same guy.
By Bendis, starring Iron Man. And it's like, really, do we really need that? I don't think so.
No.
That's kind of my issue with it.
I agree.
So we'll see, but yeah.
I mean,
I agree.
At this point, I'm kind of bitching to bitch, I suppose, because we really don't know, and it could be something completely different. Like Tony Stark could just be like in the book, but he's not the star of the book.
It's possible,
you know.
I mean, it's a thing though. It's interesting because it is becoming a bit of a pattern for Bendis to take on a franchise and write multiple books of it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he doesn't go onto a franchise with just one book. He's got to have two. which is part of, I'm sure, why Marvel has him do it, because it means that that franchise was now selling twice as many as it was before.
The thing is, he's I still think he's a good writer. He's very capable. He knows how to he knows how to tell a good story. Granted, he has that like knack for drawing stories out longer than they really need to.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because not everyone's looking at it like, oh my god, I'm reading four Iron Man comics a month. And most people are saying, oh sweet, four Iron Man comics. Right, I'm hoping.
Yeah. You would assume people are excited and that we're kind of more the minority.
Yeah, we're the jaded comic book fans that have their own podcast.
Fuck.
Yeah.
We are.
But I just... I don't know. It's one of those things that it especially chaps my ass, and they're like, look at all these new books that are coming out. Oh, wait, look at all... More! Look at more new books! It's like, crap. Just calm down. You've got so much stuff coming out.
You haven't even finished your goddamn crossover yet.
Exactly. You've got 48 titles coming out, plus an additional 12, making it 60, plus other stuff that you're already publishing. Calm your shit. Not that everyone needs to read everything that Marvel is doing. I
certainly don't.
Absolutely advise against that.
I think I'll be reading...
What's funny is I used to.
Yeah.
In 2007, 2006,
I
read everything that they put out.
Jesus.
Absolutely everything.
I think when all new Marvel now kicks up, I'm going to be reading Doctor Strange, Miracle Man, Hawkeye, Extraordinary X-Men, and maybe Old Man Logan. Depends on how I'm feeling.
No Thors?
Not Thors, no.
Or Thor or whatever. I think
whatever
it's Thor.
It is, no. I'm going to read the Lemire books. I'll probably give Old Man Logan a shot, at least. And then, yeah,
I'm just excited about that book because it's the Green Arrow team, basically.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that made that book worth reading.
And maybe they can make Old Man Logan worth reading after what Bendis is doing.
Well, I like what Bendis is doing. I mean, it's not fantastic, but it's good. I like it.
It's not terrible.
Ringing endorsement from Vincent Dusty.
Yeah.
Ringing endorsement. but no, actually, they put up a preview today for Guyman and Buckingham's first issue of Miracle Man.
Yeah.
Well, their first remastered issue. I think they put out 8 issues or so back in the day. The first one's coming out in September, so it's going to be ramping up soon, and I'm excited because...
It's kind of disappointing. I went on Marvel Unlimited the other day looking for Miracle Man stuff.
I don't think it's going to be there.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I think that falls in line more with the independent stuff, that it's not going to be up there because the rights are probably a much more complicated beast. Because Miracle Man is not something that Marvel created, it's something that Marvel owns the rights to. So that probably means the digital situation is different. And the Star Wars stuff is owned by Disney, so I would easily say now that Marvel owns Star Wars comics. But Miracle Man is still something that they have.
I don't know why they have them now. They didn't buy them back. They just said, hey, no.
So either way, I have the 3 hardcovers of Miracle, the more run of Miracle Man, and they're awesome. I will admit it's pretty dated, but it's a lot of stuff that he would do in Watchmen he does there first, and so Guyman kind of takes it in a very different direction.
Yeah.
Basically, post-Moore run, there's this kind of utopia existing on Earth, and naturally, utopias can't exist for long without something happening. So that's
right.
Because the first arc is called the Golden Age, and I think the second arc is called the Silver Age, and I think the third book is supposed to be called the Dark Age, so kind of gives you a hint of the tone where he was going there.
Man,
but
bronze. Screw it.
And I'm interested because that'll be 18 issues from Guyman and Buckingham, and I'm wondering if Guyman might do more, or if they'll hand it off to somebody else, because it'd be interesting. Because it's been several years now of nothing, and then now the Moore stuff, and then now the Guyman stuff. I'm curious as to Marvel's been having somebody else do something to follow that, or if Guyman himself might follow that up. So we'll see, but a lot of cool stuff happening one way or another if you're a Marvel fan.
Yes, sir.
I'm hoping Lemire's X-Men stuff is awesome.
Me too.
But, anyway, we don't need to talk about replacement heroes. We'll talk about them. Yeah. We talk about other shit. It goes on. Anyway, we'll talk about our picks of the week. Actually, no. A book I want to talk about from last week, Sabrina, number 4. Neither of you apparently read this. So I'm going to talk a little bit about it.
I haven't had a chance to read it.
I'm going
to
talk a little bit about it simply because I like this book a lot. When it was announced, a lot of people were thinking it was going to be kind of a companion title to Afterlife with Archie. kind of in the same universe, same kind of story, but it's definitely its own beast. It doesn't tie in at all. It's a separate Sabrina story that kind of tells of...
Isn't Sabrina dead in the... No.
She was with that weird Cthulhu monster in issue 8 of After... 7 of Afterlife with Archie, or 6 maybe, I don't know. She's around. I don't know if she's dead yet.
I was actually thinking ABP. Archie vs. Predator.
Yeah. She's dead there.
Yeah, she's dead there.
She's dead there along with everybody else. except fucking Archie.
Archie Predator?
God damn it. Way to botch that fucking ending. Anyway, Sabrina 4 gets a lot more into the threat that's looming. We actually get a cameo from some of the Archie people. But this really reads like an old school 70s horror film. Like, the location, it's got the, you know, small town with this kind of deep, seedy underbelly stuff, the secret society things going on. And the art by Robert Hack is amazing.
Yeah.
It's, again, very different from Afterlife with Archie, but it's awesome. And, I mean, it's issue 4. It should be mostly back on track now. Hopefully we get another issue of Afterlife here soon.
I was hoping.
But, yeah, I just wanted to plug Sabrina really quick because it's been great and awesome, and you should be reading it heavily. Anyway, let's talk about some picks.
Yeah, bitches.
We have a collective book of the week that that Vince and I will talk about since we read it, and Dusty didn't.
Yeah, I was going to, but
we got ran out of time because you got here late. Then you ate for another 20. Anyway. That's gonna be
the art of eating and reading comics. Like, you, I mean, that sandwich is pretty slim.
Should have done that.
Yeah, you should have.
Because I can.
Put the sandwich in your mouth, and then just kind of like a duck, kind of, but with the comics in your hand. I hope that translates.
Anyway, it's not gonna translate at all. They're just gonna hear Vince going, put it in your mouth and go. Now they hear me do it. Anyway. We have We Stand on Guard number 2. Vince and I are going to talk about this. It is the second issue of the miniseries. I believe it's a miniseries.
Is it a miniseries?
I don't know. I think it is.
I think it's an ongoing.
I don't think it is. I think you're wrong about that.
Do you have your copy there nearby?
No.
There was a new comic by Brian K. Vaughan advertised in the back, Paper Girls.
Paper Girls. I knew about that. It's old Cliff Chang.
Yeah, and that book, I mean, October. Really interested in that book. Yeah.
Hopefully it's better than this one. anyway, if that doesn't give away our feelings about this book, we are pretty underwhelmed by this book thus far.
I think this book's biggest problem is that it's written by Brian K. Vaughan. And the problem with that is that you're automatically expecting something bigger and better.
The problem with this book is that it's not Saga. People are expecting a Saga, and they got not Saga.
Not Saga.
They got something less acclaimed by him. No clue.
Galactica in 1984.
Yes, there we go. But it's a little we wanted Saga and we got Green Lantern Circle of Fire.
Lost.
Oh, we got Lost. Nice. There we go. So it's this, and there's so much going for the book though, which is what makes it all kind of more frustrating.
The art's really good.
The
concept is I really like the
concept. The concept is interesting. The art's great. There's this interesting world
and
that's out there.
If you don't know what the concept is, the concept is basically that it's what, 2240 something?
21 something.
21, it's 2120 something, I believe that's what it is. And the United States and Canada are at war with each other because of terrorist attacks
20
years ago, something like that.
100 years ago, I think.
Was
it jumped a long time.
Yeah, might have been, maybe. But anyway, so that's it. And we're dealing with a bunch of Canadian, I guess, freedom fighters?
Or insurgents, whatever. Yeah.
And it's a really interesting concept. Like we said, the art's really good because it kind of blends like this gritty, like we're in the wilderness. It's almost like a Canadian Red Dawn, except it's set in the future. So you've got like walking tanks and mechs and like robot dogs and...
And the artist, what's the artist's name?
Stephen Croce, right?
I think so, yeah. He does great with that stuff. It's a perfectly rendered book. The characters are good. The machines are all perfectly well rendered. It's a great looking book, but the thing I told you about this a little bit earlier is that I don't care about any of these characters.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's stopping me from getting invested. With Saga, he almost instantly made you care about those characters. But with these, not only do we not really care, not everybody really has a very clear identity yet either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the guy with the clearest identity is like there's this one Canadian.
There's a guy that shows up on like two pages.
Well, I was going to say the guy that only speaks French, and that's only because he only speaks French.
Yeah.
It's like that's the reason why you remember him, because there's a guy in this book that you can't understand unless you know French.
Yeah. And so it's a thing where I think that's the thing that's my hang-up with it, is that I don't care about the characters. I'm probably going to read issue 3 and see if that starts to turn around, but I honestly may not stick with it if it keeps up.
To be honest, the first 2 or 3 pages I think were the most interesting part of the book.
Yeah.
Where what happens is that it's a flashback to when one of the main characters is a little kid. I guess it's after the first book, so it's after her parents are dead, and
yeah.
I guess she's on, you know, hiding
I guess,
out.
Yeah, I think it is in between. Does that
sure. Yeah, okay. But it's okay. Like these U.S. like soldiers basically break into this guy's house.
They take him and his wife,
accusing them of attacking on the insurgents, or no,
attacking the soldiers,
attacking the soldiers by taking pop shots at their
tanks.
You know, so they hit them with the butt of a rifle, take them in. Basically, they're going to take him to jail or haul him off to some concentration camp type thing, you know. And
you find out that her and her brother, I guess, are hiding in this doghouse outside.
Yeah.
And that's
actually really funny, because I didn't really think about that until when you just said they were hiding in the doghouse, because she goes, "Who will feed the animals?" And there's two kids hiding out in the doghouse.
Yeah.
So it's like, was she selling them out? Like, that's kind of fucked up.
I don't think she was selling them out as much as she was just trying to kind of bargain for herself.
Yeah.
But it's... You're right. Those are the most interesting pages. Because you're getting even glimpses of development there. You're getting a glimpse of her journey, which is making you care somewhat. But you still don't... There's still such a huge gap. And she, in the future, is not doing enough to really get you invested in the character. And it's a little... Like I said, it's a little unfortunate. Like I said, coming off of Saga... There were really high hopes for this, and that may be our own fault of overhyping it.
True.
But I am looking forward to Paper Girls, though. I think Vaughn and Chang together will be amazing.
Awesome.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we hope it will be, because in all honesty, the art in this book is amazing. It's not helping the writing.
It's true.
But then
Chang is a creator in his own right.
Like I said, if we just take a step back, if this book was not written by Brian K. Vaughn, I think... It would be either we wouldn't have completely skipped it, or it would be viewed more favorably.
Yeah,
I think it's suffering from the fact that his name means so much in the comic book world, that knowing that he's writing it is like, man,
there's an expectation.
Could be better, yeah.
Anyway, speaking of could be better, I'm going to talk about my books. First up is Kaptara 4. Ugh.
Ugh.
I literally have that written down. I'm so disappointed with this book. I don't even like... I'm sad. Like, I'm genuinely annoyed that I'm not liking this book. Because, like, I love Chip Zdarsky. I love Mon Sex Criminals. I haven't read Howard the Duck, but I love Kaga McLeod, too, who's the artist on this. And, man, his art's amazing, but he has not got a lot to fucking work with here. And it's really just... Like, in the first couple of pages of this book... our hero reunites with one of his crewmates who's been missing, and their reunion is like a page, and then it's shuffled off to the next thing, and it's completely ignored. And I was talking to Vince about this a little bit earlier. I think Zdarsky's problem, in a way, is that I feel he's trying too hard.
Yeah.
He's basically working so hard to make it funny and cram in all the jokes that the story and the pace suffer as a result. Because like with Sex Criminals, he's working with Fraction,
yeah,
and it creates a good balance. But with these, it looks like he's the writer, and he's a little bit more unhinged, and it just feels like the books are suffering because he has to get all the jokes in.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, if you slow down and let the story breathe a little bit, you might have something to work with here. But I think I'm done with Kaptara. Honestly,
you've read 4 issues, and I'm pretty sure you've talked about all 4 issues. And all 4 issues, you pretty much said the same things.
Although, so, I would say this, on the 3rd issue, you talked about, like, the little elves, like the Smurf people,
yeah.
You know? And I actually finally got around to reading that. And that scene with them being the little gamer gators, and, like, I thought that shit was hilarious. But
yeah, I thought it was too ham-fisted. Like, it was too, over the top.
I think I just read that scene because somebody posted it, you know? I haven't read the full comic, so it might be, like...
Oh, what's his face wrote an article about it, didn't he?
I don't know if I even read
it. I think that's what happened. I think Jeff or whoever wrote an article about how Chip Zdarsky attacked the Gamergators or something.
Probably.
I don't know. I unfriended that guy. I watched him be an asshole to some guy for like 2 hours and then justify it by saying that he's kind of an asshole. And I was like, well, you are, bye.
Yes, not really.
And so, yes, no. But no, for Captara 4, like, I want to love this book, but I can't do it. I can't put myself through it. It's unfortunate, but I'm not going to keep reading. Like, I tried 4 because it was a really light week. I only bought 3 books with Captara.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, we'll go on, support them.
Yeah.
But I can't do it. Makes me sad, but I'm done with Captara.
You know, it happens. That's
anyway, gross. My last book was a little bit more promising because I bought 3 books this week, and so far I'm 0-2. But I bought Project Superpowers Black Cross number 5 by Warren Ellis and an artist whose name is escaping me. I apologize. It's Warren Ellis' take on the Project Superpowers concept, like Black Cross and all the different characters, Green Llama, all these very, very strange superheroes that are all kind of got their analogs to mainstream superheroes. But Project Superpowers, as you guys may or may not know, was started by Alex Ross and Jim Kruger at Dynamite to kind of be their own kind of hands-free superhero stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it for a while, and there's been various spinoffs and stuff over the years. And then Warren Ellis has kind of come in to revamp it, to kind of build it from the ground up. And he's doing that in a very interesting way. Basically, we're 5 issues in, so this, a lot of this stuff's not spoilers, but the basic gist of it is within the first several issues, a lot of seemingly ordinary people are manifesting powers that are very similar to Project Superpowers characters. And it turns out that the characters from the Project Superpowers universe are trapped in some kind of like purgatory-type place, so their only way out is to reach out to their counterparts in this other universe. So all these other people are starting to get these voices in their heads from these different versions of themselves. And so throughout the course of these issues, the Spirit of America, a villain of theirs, come to our world and is trying to track them down. So at the end of issue 5...
In the original Project Superpowers, the Spirit of America is actually a good guy. One of the main characters.
So he's not here. He's definitely not. And that may be another botched thing or whatever, or between the universes, I'm not sure. But by the end of issue 5, all the 7 heroes are together now. All the varying identities that they've had, they've all converged on Black Cross for various reasons. So now they're all here and they're all ready to face this villain. And it's still debating whether they're actually going to merge with their other selves or not. We're not sure yet. Some of them have, some of them haven't, because they realize that this is crazy. So it's a little bit Warren Ellis in that it's a very meta story because they are acknowledging how insane what's happening is. But it's not bad. I'm going to see it out through to the conclusion, and hopefully he sticks the landing. But it's a very... If you're a Warren Ellis fan, pretty much everything you come to expect from him is here. And it's pretty good. So, Dusty, what do you got?
Let's see here. I can't fucking read that. All right, my bad.
You can't read that. It's so far away.
You don't remember? You gave me a list like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, well, it's a big list. All right, Big Trouble in Little China, number 14, by Fred Van Lint and Joe Eisma. Buying this because Joe was doing it, and that's pretty much it.
Good reason.
Bloodshot Reborn, number 5, by Jeff Lemire and Nico Swain. This comic is fucking awesome. I love what they're doing with Bloodshot. It's been really fun. Deadly Class 15, from Remender and Wes Craig. Again, this is just one of my favorite comics. Punk Rock Assassins. Doesn't get much cooler than that. You know, it's like Hogwarts, but they're assassins and punk rock.
So, what do you say? Oncock?
Hogwarts.
I heard that.
But
punk rock.
Punk
okay.
rock. I'm like, what the fuck?
Oncock.
Alright, moving on. Fade Out number 8, which is the end of the second arc from Brubaker and Phillips. This is, I think, their best book yet they've done together. It's fucking amazing. I highly recommend it. Infinity Gauntlet number 3. I don't even know who writes or draws this one. I just know I kind of like it.
Dyson Weaver is doing something. I know he's on the book.
Sure.
He's already hit, isn't he?
Probably.
He'll be writing.
I think it's Dugan writing it.
No. Maybe it's Dugan.
Okay. I don't fucking know.
Dugan's writing. Co-writing with Weaver, who's drawing.
Okay. There we go. And then John Flood, number one, by Justin Jordan. And let me check this artist's name. Jorge Coelho? Yes. Coelho. So, however you pronounce that. This is a new series from Justin Jordan. I really liked his other shit. This one's supposed to be really good. So, I'm hoping it is. And then Outcast number 11. New one. Of course, from Robert Kirkman and Paul Azaceta. Which is soon going to be turned into a TV show. And this one's pretty cool. I like this comic. You know, it's about...
What's Outcast about?
This guy was, like, possessed as a kid and shit. Well, no, he wasn't possessed. Like, his mom was possessed, and, like, she, I guess, like, freaked out and killed people or something like that. But basically, his entire life, he's been dealing with possessed people, and, like, demons are coming after him and shit like that. So, it's kind of cool. He's going around with this priest, because the priest was hired to do an exorcism, and it wasn't working. So, the priest went and talked to this dude, and this dude helped him with the exorcism, and it actually worked. And he realized that the shit he'd done in the past probably hadn't helped anybody, mm-hmm. and that there was probably a bunch of people out there that still actually had demons in them. And so now they've got to do something about that.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, for me this week, it was a pretty light week for me. I bought 5 comics, read 4 comics, because I'm not caught up on American Vampire. So I'm going to start off with Miss Marvel number 17, which is a Last Days title, so it's a Secret Wars crossover. What I like about this book is that Miss Marvel finally teams up with Captain Marvel. And, I mean, it's an end-of-the-world situation, obviously, because it's taking place during the last days of Secret Wars or whatever the fuck. But it basically kind of shows how Miss Marvel has kind of come into her own as a hero. Like, I mean, it specifically points out, like, the changes she's made,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, in her character and, like, how she uses her powers. It's like, there's a line where she does something and Captain Marvel's like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. And, like, how does that feel when you make your body stretch out? And she was like, well, it used to feel weird and slimy, but now I feel weird and awesome. You know, and it's like, I think that kind of like perfectly captures her character. You know, yeah. It's just, it's really cool. And, that's it. Like, she teams up, like I said, she teams up with Captain Marvel, and she kind of points out, it's like, hey, we're watching you. Like, the Avengers have noticed you, S.H.I.E.L.D. has noticed you, the Inhumans have noticed
kind
you.
Of, a hint, because she's going to be on the new Avengers team.
Yeah, she's going to be on the new Avengers. So, you know, that's kind of saying, it's like, hey, even though you're only, I guess, a small-town superhero, because she still operates out of Jersey City.
Yeah.
That we know about you. We know what's going on. And there's also, like, there's a pretty impactful moment when the basic premise is that Captain Marvel shows up to tell Miss Marvel, hey, we're probably, like, honestly, it's kind of fucked up, because she's like, look, there's some real big shit happening. There's an incursion event happening. We've got a lot of superheroes in S.H.I.E.L.D. They're out in Manhattan. They're trying to help people. Let me be honest. We're not going to get here. So it's up to you to kind of round up your neighborhood or your city and try to keep them coming. And Miss Marvel says, hey, you know what? I'm looking for my brother. Can you help me? Because I've got to search all these buildings. And we can't, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it on my own. So Captain Marvel helps. And, like, during the process, they find it's like a litter of kittens, I guess. Is that what you call a bunch of kittens?
Yeah.
A litter? And there's food there, and there's water there, and it's obvious that someone left them food and water, but left. Like, basically, like, fend for yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, Miss Marvel's like, can we save them? Can we do something about these kitties? And Captain Marvel's like, you know what? We can't. Like, we can't do our job saving people and protecting people and save these animals. It's like, it sucks, it's bad, it's sorry. Like, I want to save them too, but as a hero, you're going to have to learn that eventually you're not going to be able to save everyone. And sometimes you have to take don't, like, you have to do what's bad to mm-hmm. prevent what's worse. You know, and then, I think that's a growing moment for Ms. Marvel. And then the book continues on, and then I think next issue, number 18, is supposed to be the last one. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, it's a really cool book, and I definitely think it's a culmination of everything that G. Willow Wilson has been working towards.
Nice.
Since number one. My second pick of the week is Darth Vader, number 8. And this book's really cool. It's the second part of the current story arc, and basically it's a heist. It's a heist book. The doctor, the archaeologist that Darth Vader's been working with, teams up with a bunch of bounty hunters and like robot assassins and stuff like that to infiltrate basically an Imperial Star Destroyer, an Imperial transport. They're going to steal a bunch of credits because they need money to, you know, do whatever dastardly things they need to do. And the way it's set up, it's that they are doing this behind Vader's back. Like, basically, she used Vader as a way to get this information.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, of course, Vader's been not manipulating her, like, basically told her, do this. Like, we're going to do some shit that's off the grid. We're going to need some money, so you're going to steal it for me.
Nice.
And it's just, it's a really cool setup, but the twist at the end is that Vader gets teamed up with a new kind of overseer to kind of make sure that he's doing everything that he needs to be doing, because basically, this is set after the Death Star blew up.
Yeah.
So basically, they're still like, that's a pretty big fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, so we need to keep tabs on you. And the first thing he says, he doesn't call him out and says, you were the one that orchestrated this this robbery. But he was like, well, based on the particulates on your cloak, I can tell that you've been in this region because that material's only particular to that part of the solar system. So obviously you were there in the past today. So, you know, maybe that's suspect, we don't know. We're going to have to figure it out. So it kind of ends on, like, this interesting cliffhanger that's like, well, what's going to happen? Like, I mean, obviously Vader, you know, gets out of it, but
yeah.
I guess this is kind of setting up the Vader Down crossover that's going to start in a month or two.
Nice.
So that's pretty rad. And my last pick, well, I also have Airboy number 2, which actually came out last month. The reason why I'm talking about it now is because I'm buying it digitally, because it's cheaper. Fuck it. And it's a really interesting book. It's James Robinson, and it's basically...
He's the main character of the book, and that's what's fucking weird.
He's the main character. The artist is like his sidekick. But what's interesting about it is that peppered throughout the dialogue and the story is him kind of saying, I really hate working for DC. Like,
yeah.
And he specifically says it. Like, DC's editorial team would change things, they would force his hand. Basically, he's saying that while he was writing for DC Comics, he just flat out wasn't enjoying writing comics anymore. And it was basically like, either...
Oh yeah, it's a really introspective piece of work. It's actually really cool.
I
really enjoyed the first issue. Like, he talks a lot of shit, and he's just like, I don't want to be known as the Starman guy or the Superman.
Yeah, because he's basically like, I'm kind of typecast. They keep wanting me to do these things. I don't want to do them. They keep forcing my hand. They keep forcing me to make these decisions or to change my decisions.
Well, his run at DC being the victim of his latter run, that is his terrible run, being kind of overrun with editorial interference was pretty well documented at the time, to the point that when he left DC, it was everybody was like, "Well, no shit." It was because the biggest indicator to me of that was his first issue of Justice League unveiled this big, bold, brand new team that he had to completely revamp like 3 issues later, which to me was just an indicator of okay. Here's what we promised you. Here's who we promised you could use. Oh, but here's who you actually get to use.
Can't use
and
it anymore.
It was interesting because Justice League specifically at that time was going through a very strange upheaval. DC felt the need to One of the things I remember most is that Dwayne McDuffie started writing it.
Is this the basically the Dawn of Justice era? Not Dawn of Justice, sorry.
Cry for Justice. That's Robinson's era.
Yeah.
But Dwayne McDuffie came on earlier and actually suffered additional problems. Like, he got told, this person has to be on the team. And then got told flat out, yeah, we're taking Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman from you. And, like, the issue after they all left, sales plummeted, and Dwayne McDuffie was actually going onto message boards and, like, giving people insights into what was happening with his run on the book, and was telling people flat out, there are people, he's like, yeah, there's characters on the team right now that I don't want on the team.
Yeah.
And there's characters I'd like to be on the team that I got told I can't have on the team. And there were members I had on the team that I got told to remove from the team. And it was a time where DC was, like, wanted all their books to reflect each other. Like, they wanted, like, this was during the New Krypton era. So Superman left Earth to go be on New Krypton. So he had to leave the Justice League.
Yeah.
And Batman was that the...
Was he dead?
I think so. And so he had to leave the team.
Yeah.
And then Wonder Woman was doing her... was missing in action, whatever the fuck they were doing with her. So she had to leave the team. And so, like, I remember sales dropped for the next issue where they were all gone. And people were like, well, gee. And Dwayne McDuffie himself went on the board and went, gee, the issue after Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman leave the team out of sales drop? No kidding. And it was... He so DC, for several years there, really just kind of lost it with the Justice League.
Yeah.
Really just didn't seem to know what to do with it. Because they... started it off with Meltzer's run, and it was really high profile and everything, and it was big, and he did 12 issues, I think.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think it was McDuffie, who did about 12 issues uninterrupted, and then started getting bogged down by creative stuff, and then it kind of just ultimately culminated in McDuffie leaving the book, and then Robinson, after a transition period came up, then his run had the same problems. And then I think his run might have ended the book before Flashpoint.
Didn't Duffy leave and go do Fantastic Four? Wasn't that around the same time?
McDuffie did Fantastic Four, but I don't know if it was after he left Justice League. I know he did it after or before JMS. I think it was after.
Yeah.
Because JMS only did it for a little while.
Yeah, it was right after Civil War
that McDuffie took over. Because he did the Black Panther Storm thing, Human Torch run.
Yeah.
And then I think... Yeah, so no, he was after JMS then. Because JMS led up to Civil War.
Yeah.
And then McDuffie was afterwards, and then it was Miller after him, I guess.
Yeah, and then McDuffie.
And then Hickman, and then Fraction, and then Robinson. And so, but no, just for several years there, DC really didn't seem to know what to do with the Justice League. It was very strange. I'm glad they've kind of reached this point now where they realize that the Justice League doesn't always have to slot in to what's happening, or they've at least recognized that, yeah, this one character can be missing, but we can't get rid of everyone.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, it's much better balance now. And then you've got a book like Hitch's Justice League, which is just ignoring everything going on around it.
Right.
Well, so you basically got like three different things going on in this book. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, back to Airboy.
Yeah, we don't normally read excerpts from fucking comics.
God, really? Are you going to read excerpts?
Shut the fuck up.
Yes. No, I'm not going to shut the fuck up.
Wait, what? Look, this is Robinson talking. He goes, I decided I'm quitting DC. I'm done. It is what it is. Lots of rewriting and changes in direction, seemingly on editorial whims. Lots of interfering. Pain in the ass, but nothing I can't handle. But they pay pretty good. It's just, well, I know I'm not meeting my potential. The stuff I do, the people like my writing. It's just not finding its way into my work at DC anymore.
So none of that's a mystery.
It's not mystery. It's just... It's
a surprise that he's going for it.
It's interesting, like, concerning, yeah, you're right, that he's saying it. But then it's also juxtaposed with this classic character from, I think, the 40s, who's he's a World War II fighter pilot that is transported into today's reality, except he's a comic book character, except he doesn't know he's a comic book character. And he's basically like...
Yeah, I mean, the premise of, like, the first one is that, like, he gets a phone call to do Airboy. So the comic is about Greg Hinkle and James Robinson, and they're talking about, they like get together and start like trying to pitch each other ideas, and they can't do it. They have no fucking ideas for Airboy, and so they decide to go get fucked up, and they're like, oh, and fuck.
Then Airboy shows up.
Yeah,
and at the very end, Airboy's just like, oh, I'm Airboy, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, basically they think it's a bad trip.
Yeah.
But then they realize they're both having the same trip.
Yeah.
And then they realize, okay, we're not tripping.
Right.
Like, this is real. So he, like, sits down and he explains to him, it's like, look, I don't know how to explain this to you, but I'm going to do it anyway. You're a comic book character. Like, this isn't real. You know, and he's like, and he's basically like, this is what the world, like, this is what I was fighting for in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
This is what this is what happens. Everything looks dirty. Everything looks grungy and dirt and just like grimy and filthy. You know, he's like, is this is what I'm doing? You know, so that's kind of interesting. But then, like, further juxtaposition to, like, they end up in a... I mean, I don't really know what else to call it other than a tranny bar. You know, like, that's it. And they both, Airboy and James Robinson, end up in stalls, bathroom stalls, getting blowjobs by transsexuals at the same time. They kind of, like, look over at each other and realize what's going on. And then, like, Airboy comes out of the bathroom and, like, I think he punches him in the face and he's like, you know, this person sucked me off and wanted me to return the favor. What the fuck kind of world are we living in? And then he's like, fuck it, I'm going to show you what's real. And then he takes him to his world somehow. Okay. So that's how issue 2 ends.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I know that he, like, apologized for some...
Yeah, that transsexual bar thing got...
I would
got some heat.
I would think.
But
so.
He did say, like, in this version, he and Greg Hinkle are supposed to be dicks and, like, supposed to be really bad people. So, like, you know.
It's style. I would hope it's stylized version because I would like to think that
it's definitely stylized.
Doesn't
version.
Really. It's
He's
like, oh, let me go
not really
and
a fucking
snort prick. Coke and, you know, do all of this shit.
I mean, for me, it was pretty clear that these guys are. It's that instance where, like, somebody in a movie says something horribly offensive, but the character is a terrible person.
Yeah.
And some people get upset. They're like, well, how dare you promote that? And I'm like, but they're not promoting it. Like,
they're promoting
terrible,
terrible
person.
People saying terrible things.
Yeah. Well, like Chasing Amy. You guys may have seen it once in a time. Jason Lee's character, what's his name, Banky, says at one point that all a lesbian needs is a good, deep dicking. And in one of Kevin Smith's Q&As, somebody took him to task for that. They were like, do you think it's cool that you put that in a movie, that you implied that that's all it needs? And he's like, but that's not what I did.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, what are you talking about? He's like, I had the stupid character say that because he's an idiot. And he doesn't get anything. And she's like, well, I understood that. Do you think everybody else understood that? And he's like, well, that was my intention. He's like, if that was misconstrued, that's one thing. But I can only write it as I see fit.
I just think it's funny because obviously she didn't understand it.
Yeah.
She took him to task.
Exactly.
She I guess she felt the need to take him to task in as much as, like, she didn't think everybody else was understanding that. They just saw him saying, because that was the thing about Chasing Amy in a way, is that the Banky character for a lot of, like, comic book fans was kind of a guy that they identified with.
Well, you know that movie is, like, basically a true story about Kevin Smith and...
True is stretching it
a lot. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it absolutely
He's
is.
Absolutely admitted
but
that...
aspects of it, like the scene where he, like, finds out, like, in her past and, like, freaks out on her. Like, he says that scene was almost word for word, like, what actually happened when Kevin Smith freaked out. And that's why Kevin matured and later realized it and gives the speech in Chasing
Well, we're not even talking about the Ben Affleck character. We're talking about the Jason Lee character. The Ben Affleck character is the one that does all that.
Yeah.
But, like, the Jason Lee character, it was kind of, it was interesting because I think the issue became that, like, fans identified with his character because they didn't like the romance crap. They wanted to play video games. They wanted to watch their shows. They kind of were just very much... He was very much that kind of casual fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so people identified with what he was saying in a way that they probably wouldn't have otherwise.
Hell,
and
it's even like, we came in for this stoner movie. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah, exactly. Chasing Amy gets real a lot.
Whatever, you know.
So it's a little strange, but that was something that he got... That it wasn't something that became like a national crisis because that movie came out in 97, but... somebody did add, they were like, how did you feel comfortable putting that in a movie and promoting that message? And he's like, but I'm not promoting that message. He's like, an idiot character who's always wrong said that, and because he's always wrong. Like, it's that idea where when you take somebody to task for something like that, I think you have to understand the context of it, because it's easy to say nobody should say these things, and you're going to find that 99% of the time, the person who wrote it is going to be, absolutely, that's why a terrible person's the one saying it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's kind of funny when you're dealing with a movie. or any written piece of fiction, I guess, because you're dealing with the voice of the writer,
mm-hmm.
because they're writing everything,
mm-hmm.
then you're also dealing with the voice of individual characters.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, how I can definitely see how some people have a problem separating those.
Oh, yeah,
because,
sure.
You know, it's Jason Lee said this because Kevin Smith wrote it. So does Kevin Smith...
But Kevin Smith wrote a character.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It becomes this... And so I can understand being a little... It was a thing where... Like I said, you have to be careful, because I think that was the issue with Chasing Amy, is that people identified with the Banky character, so having him say that, it made a whole bunch of man-children think that that was somehow an actual thing.
Well, I mean, the funny thing, it's like, I always find it funny that Banky's character was attacked because he was an inker.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, you're just a tracer.
Yeah.
But if you actually know anything about how comics are made, inkers do a lot of fucking work.
Yeah.
They don't just trace.
No.
Well, they add a lot of...
That's the joke.
That's the joke.
That's the joke.
But like you said, you can see how someone would be like, oh, yeah, inkers. Like, back when I was fucking 12 and I saw Chasing Amy, I was like, oh, inkers, yeah, fuck them. They're just tracers, because they're just tracing... They're just going over with ink. But obviously, like, now, almost 30 years later, I realize that's not the case.
Yeah.
That's actually a funny joke, though.
Yeah.
You're fucking with a G, you fucking tracer. I'll trace the chocolate around your dead fucking body, you fuck.
Oh, man. But anyway, I've got one more book, and that's Amazing Spider-Man and New Year Vows number 3. And this book is pissing me off for... If only because it's showing how good Dan Slott can write Spider-Man. And I know I've said that with every goddamn issue of this book, and we're on the third one. But seriously, this is a great Spider-Man story. It's really fucking good. It shows that you didn't really have to annul or do whatever the fuck to his marriage. You can write a good Spider-Man story with him being married.
Yeah.
And
no shit.
No shit, of course. But... And Dan Slott's writing it, which I think he's been putting out mediocre Spider-Man stories for a while. You know, and it's just, you see him writing this and it's like classic Peter Parker. And he's doing things that make sense. He's not like Black Cat that all of a sudden is becoming a fucking crazy supervillain that wants to kill Aunt May. Or he's not writing him as J. Jonah Jameson, who has completely devolved back into his, you know... Gotta kill Spider-Man, catch him raw, you know, like that kind of asshole he was back when he was, you know, I guess in the newspaper game. So it's like, why? Why are you teasing us with this? I don't even know. I'm not gonna go that far to say, why are you teasing with this? I just hope that he takes some of this and transports it over to the Amazing Spider-Man once the book formally, officially relaunches. That's it. That's all I gotta say about that.
You managed to say quite a bit, so...
Yeah.
It's the nature of the beast, though. But, needless to say, we managed to stretch this into an hour and a half. Man, that last half hour was like all your picks, Vince.
Good.
You made that go on for quite a bit. We made that go on for quite a bit.
I was the only one talking.
No. But, it's... What was I saying? I don't fucking know, man.
It's
late. That's it.
Let's just call
it's the end of the, it's the end of the show.
Yeah.
Fucking everybody go home. What are we doing here? I don't think anybody's going to tell us when to leave. But no, we'll be back with you guys next week.
I just got to say this. It still bothers me. Because every time I go watch a Marvel movie,
mm-hmm.
every fucking time, everyone by this point should know there's a bumper, there's something coming during the credits or after the credits. Why are you dumb motherfuckers still standing up and leaving? And this is the best part. When you've got, all the time, you've got someone that realizes they're in a Marvel movie, and they stand by the door. And it's like, sit the fuck down!
Jesus, you're really angry about this.
It really annoys me, because you know, everyone fucking knows.
It's gonna be okay, Vince. It's gonna be okay. Alright, we're done. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Say bye, Vince.
Bye.